This is a share of a lifetime, so just be patient.
Hey, talk to me, say something.
Yeah, so
There we go.
stop me. Anyway, I was at a carnival and I met this girl, another guy and I was together. We met these two girls and we had her picture made at this one place. You could get them for that time of a dime or a quarter. And the next day, I did line work for a living and we'd go out, but the next day it was raining and we was waiting till the rain stopped to go to work. And this guy walked in the warehouse and he looked at me and come over and knocked me off a nail keg and pulled a gun on me. And he said, "I'm going to shoot you. You broke up a family." And I said, "Well, before you shoot me, tell me what I done." And he pulled this picture out and he said, "Is that you?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "That's my wife." And I didn't know she was married, of course. And anyway, we talked it over and finally we got the gun away from him. But it seemed like I was always at the wrong place at the wrong time. And another time when I got in jail, and I got in jail a lot, I would go on the wagon. You call it something else, but anyway, I'd go on the wagon. And so I was on the wagon and I walked in this joint and I hadn't drank something in quite a while. And the guy said, "Oh, come on, Jimmy, you can have a drink. I've seen you drinking." So I had a beer and I had many more. And I woke up in jail not knowing what I was there for. And I hit a car doing 85 miles an hour and almost wiped the family out. And they had the charges in there of manslaughter. Anyway, I stayed in there and they dropped the charges. The people lived, thank God, and they dropped the charges. And you know, I didn't want them to let me out. I knew I'd drink again and I'd be afraid that I would kill somebody. I lived in a lot of fear when I was a young kid and what would happen to me. And anyway, they let me out and I never felt comfortable. I just never felt comfortable around people. And I heard about Los Angeles, and they told me they had some funny people out there. And I thought, well, I'll go out there and see if I fit. And I went out there, and of course, where does a young man end? He ends up on Skid Row, you know, and doing everything that Skid Row people do. And the World War II broke out then, and I was up in Oregon working at it. World War II broke out, and I volunteered for it the next day, and I bummed around quite a bit with the Air Force, and then I got to go overseas on the Queen Elizabeth. That was the biggest ship going that day, and I got to cross the pond in that, and I ended up in England, and I stayed there for most of the war. And we was there on D-Day. And incidentally, if you've never heard it, we had 11,000 planes in the air on D-Day in one day. And that was quite a set. So I stayed there and I went to Germany and I got in the black market. I had four stolen cars and to paid the Barnaby ODs and I got the black market. And I got caught and it cost me money, but they didn't court-martial me. And anyway, I come home in 1948 and I knew there was something wrong with me. We didn't have that terminology of alcoholism. You was a drunk, a lush well, or a slob or whatever. And I knew I was all of those. And I got in jail with another guy in Little Rock. And I went over to see him the next day, and God, I had hangovers. And I went to him and I said, "Johnny, I'm crazy." I said, "Anybody that does the things I do," and I'd done some horrible things, almost beat two guys to death, and was in a bank, and three policemen were shooting at me, and I didn't know what they were shooting at me for. And finally, I asked him, I said, "What was you shooting at before?" They said, "That's a bank. We thought you was robbing it." So anyway, they tucked me around the corner and see that I wasn't hurt and let me loose. But anyway, I come back to Little Rock. We'd been in jail and I don't know if I'd ever heard of the word Alcoholics Anonymous or not. Surely I had. But anyway, Johnny said, I hear AA can help people like us. And I said, well, if it don't help me, I'm gonna die. And I said, I just can't live this way. So we went down there and it was upstairs. And I had never heard of anybody that drank like me that just didn't go ahead and die. We didn't have recovery houses like you have today. This was in 1948, and that's been a while back. So we went down there. I went upstairs and I saw a bunch of sober people up there, and it made me feel uncomfortable. And I started to leave, and the guy said, "You looking for somebody?" I said, "I'm looking for AA." And he said, "This is it." And I said, "I need some of it." And I was sure they'd give me a shot or a pill or something. I'm coming unglued, you know. And he took me over to a couch and he gave me this big book. And he said, "Read that." And my education is pretty limited. And I thought, my God, to read that, I can't do that. But I said, if I don't, they'll throw me out of here and I'm going to die. So I turned to the back of it, and I think when the pupil's ready, the teacher appears. And I read the stories where people had drank like me and recovered for the first time in my life. That gave me hope that I wouldn't die drunk. So they gave me a cot to sleep on and fed me for 2 weeks. And the physical recovery was great. And I got a job up in the mountains, and I married again and had a son, and many, many good things happened to me. And I didn't drink for 2 years, didn't even want it. But I come home one evening, and the wife had a mirror too, once in a while. And I come home and she said, "Jimmy, you know you're an alcoholic, you can't drink much, but I have three beers in the ice box. Let's each drink one, we'll split the third." And I thought for a minute and I said, "Well, I'll have this beer and won't have another for 2 years." That's pretty good alcoholic rationalization, you know. And I didn't turn green and I didn't explode. And I went ahead and went to sleep and went to work the next day and didn't think about a drink until I started home. And I said, "Jimmy, get three more and have three tonight." And I went to the package store and I never bought three beers in my life, the package store. And here comes the alcoholic thinking. It said, "Jimmy, buy a six pack and you'll have three tonight, three tomorrow night." That's beautiful alcoholic thinking. So we did have our beer, and I turned green and I exploded. And I was drunk off and on for about 5 years, the best I think. Went to Alaska a couple of times, and I built towers in them days for drinking money. And anyway, I came back and things was tough. And the wife was going to leave me, which she should have done. And Christmas Day, only way I knew to get over a hangover in them days is to get drunk again. And it wouldn't hurt so bad till the next day. So I went to this beer joint to get drunk again. And I saw a half a dozen guys, and I knew most of them. And we's about the sorest bunch you ever run into. We had the morals of an alley cat and thieves and liars and cheats. And I got to see myself. I said, "Jimmy, you become everything in life you hate. Everything you hate in somebody else, you've become." And I promise this power greater than me. I always believed it was a power, but I didn't want to do his will. He wanted me to be a decent guy, and I didn't want to be a decent guy. I wanted to run and play and live immoral and what have you, and he didn't want me to do that. So I never would do his will. But that day I said, "Jimmy, you're gonna die if you don't do his will." And I promised him that I'd do his will for the rest of my life if he'd keep me sober. Thank God I've never desired to drink since that day. And I started cleaning up the record of the past, and mostly that was financially. And then I started cleaning up the rest of my life. And good things began to happen to me. And for something that happened, I thought was bad, but was good. I lost a bearing at Flagstaff and I couldn't pay for it. And I had a rich brother at that time, and I asked him to send me the money, and he did. And I went to Malibu. And God, I had to work for him because he and I didn't get along. But I went to Malibu and I got a big fat resentment at somebody. And I wanted to kill him, but I didn't want to go to the pen to kill him. And I would study it, I'd pray over it. And to see how sick these resentments will take you, I got to getting a headache. And I said, my God, I'm having a tumor. And then I got to where it was hard to breathe. And I said, my God, I'm getting emphysema. And I talked to a guy about it. And he said, you'll have to pray for it. And I said, oh my God, not him. And he said, can you stand another drunk? I said, you mean you get drunk if you don't pray for people you hate? He said, what do you think? So I went back out and I was working. And I'm shoveling dirt in an old wheelbarrow. And I got honest. And I said, God, that man hasn't done anything to me that I haven't done to him. And I said, please, wherever he's at, will you bless him? That will be done. And you know, the tears just started rolling. They started rolling out. No emotions. I just started crying like a baby. And when I got my composure, this thought hit me, and it's been great help to me. It said, Jimmy, all of your problems are mental and self-imposed. And you don't ever have to hurt like that again if you don't want to. Now, I've had a few resentments since then, but they never got that far. I start praying for them and get over them. So anyway, I was reading Step Four, and it said many of us had a needed an overhauling in sex. And I said, my God, that made me, because that had ruled my life, especially in Germany, where the women, all their young men had been killed and put in prison. And they wanted to bury somebody and get back to the States. So I'd got just as low as you could. And I said, don't let me lose my head. So anyway, I said, I've gone as low as I can. And I promised God if he'd keep me sober, I'd never drink again. And from that day to this, I've never wanted to drink again. And I stayed in that old beer joint from 9 that morning till 2 that night, going outside, puking and heaving. And when the food's all gone, the yellow mile comes. And I don't know if you've got to that stage or not, but hang in there, you will one day. And I just didn't want to drink. And I had money in my pocket. And I went home and I turned on all the lights, and the wife had gone and tucked the boy in. And I just knew I was going to have DTs and die. I just felt so bad. And I walked around in the house till I'd give out. And finally, I just flopped myself over on the bed. And, you know, I slept 5 hours of peaceful sleep that I hadn't slept in weeks and months. It was always sweating at night and getting sweat and waking, wet in the bed and what have you. But that day I slept at peaceful. And I got up the next morning and walked outside, and monetary things meant nothing to me anymore. I said, all that matters to me is be de live a decent life and be a decent human being. And so I said, I knew I was going through a divorce. And I said, I'll give her everything. I'll give her the house. I'll give her everything that's a dime in, and I'll start my life over. And I've tried to do that. I've cleaned up the wreckage of the past and done these things. So when it told me that I needed to overhaul it in sex, I think when the pupil's ready, the teacher appears. And my brother was selling his place, and they called a real estate woman, and she come out there and drove up in the yard with a fire engine red Thunderbird convertible, 55. And God, when she got out of that convertible and stretched, I started vibrating. She had it all. And she went by me and went in and talked to Mary. And when she come back, she gave me her phone number. And I called her, and we start going together. And nothing happened, but we'd drive around, and once in a while we'd stop and have a little romance, not anything heavy. And in those days, and I don't want to be facetious or insensitive, if you didn't make out by the third date, you wasn't a good operator. But I'd been bumming around with her, and we dated 3 months, and had a wonderful time. And never went beyond the kissing stage. So I started to leave, and she'd come out, and we went to the cafe, and we was talking and telling each other how much we'd enjoyed each other. And it kind of got kind of quiet, and she said, "Jimmy, would you like to go to bed with me before you leave?" Excuse me. What a question to ask a gigolo like me, you know. And I said, "You know, Lynn," I said, "I've been wanting to go to bed with you since the day I saw you. But," I said, "everything that I have ever touched, I'll tuck it to the bottom of the bucket and make something cheap and immoral out of it." And I said, "This is the first decent relationship I've ever had. And I have the highest respect for you. And I have a respect for myself." And I said, "I'd like to leave it that way." And she said, "All right." She said, "You get to where you're going," and then let me know. I went back to Marysville, California. And that promise is the seventh promise. What's that?
Just keep going, Jimmy.
And the
Just keep going.
promise is our whole attitude and outlook on life changed. Mine changed. Mine changed. And I went to Marysville and rented a room in an old hotel that was called Heartbreak Hotel. And I stayed up there 3 days. And I'm sleeping late one morning and praying his will for me and the power to carry that out. And the guy called me from AA and said, "There's a woman out here in bad shape. And she's never been to AA, but she needs help. Would you go see her?" I said, "Yeah." And I went out there, and there she was, 80 pounds, black and blue, where she'd stumbled and been beat up, and her teeth were knocked out. Not a beautiful 13 step, I'll tell you that. So I stayed there, and we went and got her some teeth. That helped some, but not a hell of a lot. And so we drove around, and I think we said we drove 400 miles that night and went to a meeting. And I stayed there that night. Bo Brummel slept on the couch, and she slept in her room. So nothing fancy went on. And the next morning I got up and I said, "I've got to go." And she said, "Jimmy, if you leave me, I'll die." She said, "I've got nobody to take care of me." And we made a meeting the night before. That's the first AA meeting that she'd ever been. So I said, "Well, we'll have to go to Reno and get married," because I said, "I can't live without marriage anymore." I said, that was my MO when I was drinking, and I can't do that anymore. So we went to Reno and got married. And all the way over there, she was having. I thought she's going into DTs, and I'd have to stop, let her puke. And you know when that ceremony was made? Mary Ann quieted down, and when we got in the car, she went to sleep and slept like a baby. So after she was sober a while, I talked to her about that, and she said, "Jimmy, if you hadn't married me," she said, "I'd never stayed sober." She said, "The life that I had lived, I hated myself. I just couldn't live with myself." And she said, "When you married me," it said, "just maybe, Just maybe I'll be able to stay sober and be a decent woman the rest of my life. We was married 35 years and 3 days when she passed away, and she never had another drink. I don't know how we're getting along here, but
I think you're getting close to the end. She maybe
anyway,
put up.
she had Alzheimer's for 7 years, and I was able to take care of them 7 years. Not one day have I ever lived in self-pity or grieving. I thought I was the luckiest man in the world to be able to take care of somebody you love and have them stay sober for the rest of their life. So I've had a good so I can tell you many more stories. I've been married 12 times, and I've been married to some great women, and we lived a decent life, and I'm grateful for that. Today, I'm not ashamed of what I've done that back in my life. I'm not proud of some of the things I've done, but I'm not ashamed of them. And I thank God for him letting me drink alcohol till it beat me down, till I was willing to change. That I was willing to live a spiritual life and try to be a decent human being. And I thank God for that. And you just can't imagine what a thrill it is for me to come out here and share some of my experiences with you. I hope God blesses you. I came in AA and I hated everybody. God, we had an old man from Folsom. He'd been in there 9 years and cut up a bunch of guys, and he knew about hate. And I was on the program for a while, and he come to me and he said, "Jimmy, I have never seen a man that hated like you." He said, "You're the most bitter man I ever seen." And 5 years later, we was at a conference in San Francisco, and he come over, and Elmer cried, and it was unusual for Elmer to cry. And he said, "Jimmy, you've changed more than any man that I've ever known. I don't have the same values I used to have. I can love now, and I can do that when I come to AA. And I just can't live in hate anymore. And I'm so proud of that. I live at ease, and I'm having a good life. You think I believe that lived to be 103 years old? God, I didn't think I'd live to be 21. And here I am, 103, and I'm having the greatest time of my life. And this is such a thrill for me to come out and let me share a part of my life with you. I love you all, buckets full, and there's a damn thing you can do about it.
God
That'll
bless
be
you.
all for me.
Thank you so much, Jimmy. If you can all unmute yourselves and just, salute.
Yay,
Thank you,
Jimmy.
Jimmy.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you so
Thank you,
much.
Jimmy.
Thank you,
Jimmy.
Jimmy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.